like living with a six-year-old.
I still go on play dates. I just call them play dates so I can go out with Eric and Paul and Adam.
You sound like his mom. He likes sport too. You guys would be such good friends.
I'll do all the technical aspects. Adam will be the face. Paul will be the muscle. And then Eric will be the sales guy.
We're screwed from the muscle.
Paul will be muscle and the troubadour.
I handed a jar to my son to open the other day, so we're in bad shape.
Hello, and welcome to the Four Fathers Podcast.
I'm Paul.
I'm Adam.
I'm Fife.
And I'm Eric. And this is a podcast about faith, fatherhood, friendship, and other F words like finding a home. Church. We're talking about finding a home, church. So we are still going to talk about the fighting. We have your votes in, but we're probably not going to get there tonight because we have another topic that is burning a hole in our brains.
We don't like the topics that we're talking about.
No. I like the topics. I actually want to talk about traditional college versus on-the-job training. I think there's a lot of conversation there, and I think there's some... That's what we got people to vote for, and I think that it's... Oh, no, wait. Online anonymity is the one that everybody wanted us to vote
for. Exactly, right.
Okay, so we'll talk about online anonymity.
Yeah, but that's three. Shouldn't it be lower? Because I thought one was...
Are we going to argue about the rating system now?
Yes. Yes.
I didn't understand the rating system, so whatever.
Not being best spot, it was written on the form, my friends. It was twice in there. And Adam, did you get the link? And Paul did move. Wow.
Okay. Well, then the death penalty versus capital punishment, which is not a debate because they're the same thing.
I know,
if we're going by the rating scale.
Oh, wait a minute. No,
I'm Adam.
We'll talk about both topics. We'll talk about death penalty versus college. Traditional college versus capital punishment. That's what we'll talk about.
Well, anyway, so
it's too rough for me.
So Eric brought up the conversation today as he's exploring different church options about how to find a church and like what he's looking for. And so I want him to give some background on where he's at and what he's seeing. And then we can have some conversations because, you know, he actually just made the highly potent point of the fact that of this group of people, he's the only one in this group that spent more than a few months without a church. Heathen. And so he's coming at heathen.
I'm kidding. Sorry.
Well, I was gonna
so he's coming at, yeah, right. He's coming at it from a different perspective than the rest of us. And so we're having some, I think this conversation will approach some things having to do with how the church has been impacted by recent events and what's been going on there and what that looks like, you know? So, let's get started. So, Fife, why don't you give us some background about what you were seeing? Because you started this conversation 30 minutes ago, and I think it'd be good.
Sure. All right. So, let me give a little frame of reference.
Tell us we will die like dogs. What? Tell us we will die like dogs.
Sorry. The little frame of reference is I've been, you know, for about 2.5 years, probably mix of COVID and a little bit before. So, it's probably been more like three. Have kind of been just, you know, absorbing the online church experience for a while, which, you know, lost its interest after, you know, a certain point of time, you know, even after COVID. So at this point, most of my church experience has been with obviously hanging around you guys, with some of my current relationships that I have with, you know, individuals, you know, from time to time that I meet for breakfast to hang out and whatnot. But my church home has been lacking. So in essence, you know, the wife and I sat down and kind of said, okay, we're going to try this, you know, what I'm deeming the church honeymoon chapter of our life. So we're kind of out there looking at churches and, you know, using the internet to, you know, do a little research and find stuff. And so it kind of all brought up the topic around the fact that, you know, I wanted to hear, and what I was seeing was a lot of churches, either whether just from their online presence alone, at least initially, for those that, you know, I visited, I can add a, you know, additional, you know, input. What I was seeing a lot was, one, they were either heavily embracing the online, we'll call online experience, and, you know, using that online medium to continue to reach their congregation and the people beyond that. And they were doing it successfully, whether it was big, small, or in between. And, the other piece of it was, is I was seeing a big thing that was constantly, you know, when you get into the About Us pages for smaller churches or just even, you know, a church site that's not well polished, you know, they have their pastor listed and right next to his or her name is interim. And it's like, when you hear that, you kind of, it throws a little bit of a red flag up, you know, what, why is it interim? You know, what happened? You know, what's going on? And, you know, how, what does that look like from a structure standpoint? Because, you know, it is important. I mean, obviously you want to make sure the person who's running the show or part of the congregation and leading the congregation is, you know, well established, and you're not jumping into this, you know, body of people with the intentionality that you're trying to make, you know, relationship with someone, and to find out that in 6 months later they're just going to be replaced by another person that, you know, might be not what you expected and not what, you know, the vision, you know, that you saw that was established under the interim person.
Is anyone really established?
Well,
hopefully
they're committed for sure, but so,
or they should be.
Yeah, well, you know, so it brought up the conversation for me. Like, I was thinking, like, okay, what happened? Like, you know, churches had to adapt to some extent to this new paradigm of technology and a new platform to meet people at and on. Some did it well. Some still struggle with it. Some don't do it at all. When it ended, you know, and COVID's lockdown stopped, and they were able to go back to their normal, you know, MO, may or may not have, you know, basically have just, you know, kind of swept that aside and didn't continue that, you know, medium on. And not that it's bad or good either way. And not that I use it as a guide, because I don't want to frame this out as like, as when I'm church hopping, that like, hey, if you meet the five criteria, then you're going to get me to sign up and I'll be part of your church, because there's a lot more to that depth.
At least for the Sundays you visit. We only have to meet the criteria on the Sundays you visit.
Right, every it's like, cue the deer.
Welcome to the marketing side of my life. I can window stage anything for five weeks.
But so, like, that brought me to the question. It's like, okay, I've been out of the picture from church, but I remember very much struggling to understand what that, like, meant in my 20-something, 30-something, you know, lives while raising a family and you know, being part of church plants and stuff like that. The struggle, because relationship is important, and relationship definitely helps to be the glue for a lot of your, whether or not you stay within a church body and you stay, you know, connected and you're engaged, because without it, you just become this, you know, what's called seat filler. And, you know, at that point you just, you know, you get wrapped up into, and Paul and I were talking about this a little earlier, that there's an age group that I kind of fall into, the 25 to 48 age group. Yes, it's below 60.
I'm not sure how you can provide your groups.
That is our generation, my friend. But anyway.
No, actually, we're the tail end of the Gen Xers. If you're real, like, our generation is the Gen Xers, and we're the tail end of that. So
yes,
we actually go up, not down. Just so we're clear. No.
Fine.
Like, you can stop sharing screen, Eric.
Oh, yes. Sorry. That's a good point.
He got so subtle, and then he started typing caps. And
I got annoyed. Oh, I can see here. Thank you. No, did finally, because I just wasn't even paying attention.
I think COVID, stream it online, made it so you didn't have to be there. You could schedule it on your time in your schedule. And going back to a live church, putting that back on the schedule takes intentionality. And some people thought that was a priority, and some people didn't. You know, I think there is a reality to that.
Does it take intentionality, or is it because you don't have strong relationships in the body that you're a part of, or the body that you say you're a part of?
I think a lot of people would say that I still have the relationships that I want, and now I don't have to have the relationships I don't want, and I don't have to get up on Sunday morning, or I can fill that time with something else that I think is more important at the time.
Sure, but are those people still engaged in your church? Do you still consider them engaged as part of your body?
Honestly, I'm not the one you should ask. We didn't lose anybody because of COVID, except for people that passed away. We didn't lose. I don't think we actually lost any people.
But I mean, the other thing too, and the thing that I brought up was the intentionality where, you know, when people stop coming, they prioritize other things like what their kids were doing and stuff. And to that end, they have friend groups from other areas, from work, from their kids' things, from et cetera. And so that's where they found community through. So I think the goal of any church is to try to, you know, bring people in, disciple them, you know, send them out. But, that's the church's priority. That's not necessarily somebody else's priority, especially in New England, where there's a large Catholic community. And, you know, from a Catholic perspective, and this is because I grew up Catholic, like you go to church on Sunday because you do your because you have to, and then you're done for the week. And so the idea, I think maybe I'm putting too much of my own perspective, my own rose colored glasses on, but like church is a have to do. And then once you do it, you're done. And if I could do church through a computer, maybe that makes my life easy and more convenient. And so, you know,
well, let me ask a question here. So I get your point and I see it, but if we eliminate that 2-year period, let's just take COVID off the board. So we have that 2-year gap that screwed everything up, messed or revealed stuff that shouldn't have had, you know, that was buried or ignored. What was happening before that 2-year period? Was most churches just ignoring those people that were, you know, maybe coming on a Sunday? Because I know that if I have an event, you know, on a Sunday, especially if I was a football guy, it would be like, oh, church Sunday morning or football. A lot of times it would be like, well, then I'm just going to take that over, you know, going to church to be in, you know, the congregation. Now, COVID made that easier because then at that point you were just developing bad habits to just, you know, replace your Sundays. And it happened with me because in essence, you know, your Sundays just became like, I'll sleep a little later. I'll catch the 11 o'clock online service, or I'll catch it on Thursday, or, you know, whatever, because they'll have many more. It's like, you know, it's like watching reruns kind of in essence, because you're checking your box. But like the tools that were put into place to help those people come back really didn't they gave them an opportunity to be able to just get the message and hear it, which is a good thing. I'm not dismissing that.
Yeah, but that's part of it.
I don't think that, you know, those attitudes of those people that were, say, part of the body prior to that window of the 2 years, you know, were any different than post. I mean, in essence, would you agree or not agree?
I think COVID gave people a chance to readdress their priorities.
Well, let me say this. Ask the question again, because you asked the question at the beginning and then I kind of lost it. So
my question again, just to rephrase.
Well, what were we doing differently? What was the church doing differently?
Well, yeah.
And what if that never happened? What if COVID never happened? Right. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Correct. Summarizer okay. Chief. Yes.
Thanks. Well, I think it depends on the church. I mean, this is that whole seeker versus non versus
real. Like, let's talk at your church level. Like, well, how did you guys get to deal with it?
Well, so here's the thing. People? Absolutely. So for us, we are a different, I don't know, really different, but so what happened with us is we had a executive pastor at the time who had actually changed, and actually they were all kind of interim after we lost our lead pastor. Like one of the things I wanted to go back to at some point was, I think the fact that somebody's an interim pastor actually shows a lot of wisdom and discernment, because they understand that I'm here for a bit, but it's super hard. Like, you're picking the CEO of the company. You're in a church. It's not just culture and it's not just the money thing. Like, we need to make sure that like everything's aligned, that like biblically, culture wise that they understand what's going on, what the church's been trying to do, if they have elders. Like, there's a lot that goes on. Like, when our lead pastor left, somebody told one of the elders, it's going to take you 5 years to find a new lead pastor. And they were like, that's crazy. And it legitimately did.
I believe it.
So like that happened. And then when we went into COVID, it the stress that it put on all the volunteers, like at the elder level and the teaching pastor level, was so much so that there was some unhealthiness there, and it just got like exacerbated more efficient than that.
Let me ask you, what was that stress? Because in essence, COVID didn't introduce like more stress. It separated. It made it harder to communicate.
There's nothing that you've ever said on the podcast that has ever been more wrong than what you just said there. And I can understand it, because even now I'm like, was that really as hard? But it was super stressful and super crazy, because not only are the people trying to like live their life, but again, they're all volunteers. So they're like, do I have a job? Am I making money? But they're also having to be like, oh, now I have to work with other people, like not face to face, but online. But again, they didn't even like, there was no framework. So there's this whole thing. I'll try to do it justice. So there's this thing called the Kinevan framework, right? Kinevan, where like you go in, thinking that I have a framework for everything, and there's a best practices for this, where sometimes you have any framework, right? It's like that time in the movie Sully where they're like, well, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? He's like, because I was figuring this stuff out as I go. And so that's exactly how we met. And not, we are figuring things out as we go, but like people weren't necessarily ready to change right away. So like there are people that could pivot quick, and people that were like, this is great, this is a challenge. And other people going, I can't see my friends, I can't see my family, I'm really afraid of this. My family's sick, I can't go see them, like just going through crazy stuff. And like, you know, the phone's ringing off the hook. We had we've had quite a few people on Zoom, but like it took us a while to like figure that out. So, apologies if I'm coming off strong, but man, it was crazy. But again, I understand, because even now I'm like, I can see not going through that and thinking that, oh yeah, we could have just pivoted, but like being in the middle of it, we just couldn't. Like it was all messy. It was like that thing where you're like, everybody has a plan until like the enemy starts shooting at you.
Until they get hit in the mouth.
Yeah. And then we all got hit in the mouth and we're like, we don't have a plan. And like, you know, churches are kind of challenging, and ministry's challenging anyway. I mean, you know this at Mill City, like, you know, ministry is, it's all gray areas, and it's dealing with people. And I don't know if I'm going to ever see fruit. And so you have that. And then to add COVID on top of that is kind of crazy. So again, apologies if I don't mean to come off strong and go down, you know, go up one side and down the other, but
I'm going to set the framework early that I'm going to poke
some bears. There's some wounds here. Yeah. No, poke the bear.
There's some wounds here.
So, okay. So a couple of things. I mean, obviously, and I just trying to understand more, and I, you know, I'm excited that you're passionate about it, because in essence, you guys have all been in the trenches, we'll say. I've been on the outside of the factor, and outside of the whole, you know, inners of church. But I think one of the things I'm trying to, and maybe if I put the framework in back to the interim pastor thing that I was trying to, you know, kind of understand more, is yes, pastors have a big job on their, you know, plate, and interim pastors have even a bigger job, because they're not in places a lot of times to be able to be fully equipped to be able to do that job a lot, because they're just thrown into it because they need to, you know, they need to fill that spot in order to be able to have a captain of the boat. And so with that, I'm looking at it going, okay, like, what happened to those pastors that were in those places?
Yeah.
And what broke their back? Because in essence, COVID did do some things.
COVID contributed.
COVID did, but I don't think COVID.
But I think there was something else going on there beforehand. So
yeah.
I think something to remember is the clergy in the U.S. has been skewing older for decades. There's a lot less younger pastors coming in.
Yeah.
And I think what you saw, and I think that, you know, part of the problem, and maybe this isn't a problem, but the general culture is just not as Christian. Like, that's not the...
What do you mean by that?
The U.S. is shifting away from a Christian culture, from a biblically based culture. And that's, you know, some of that's the nature of humanity and our
biblically fallen based nature. Traditional, traditional, like, because there is some traditions.
Right. It's not just traditional, though. No. Like, it's there are the percentage of people that would call themselves Christians in the U.S. is lower than it has been ever in the history of this country.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. So, and so that was already wearing on the clergy that had already been doing this for however long they'd been doing it. Right. A lot of them were older clergy, not all of them. I mean, there's definitely some young pastors out there and people, but I think then COVID hit and it was like, oh, this is too much. Right.
Well, and then the political divides and the, you know, all the other divides that have happened. I think that's taken a toll. But what I would say is go to, you know, pick one of those churches that you are. And I actually would love to hear about your experience with each of them, like maybe not by name, but like I took this out of this one, and this out of that one. And like I said, I'd love for you to come to our church and be like a secret shopper and be like, yo, y'all do this well. And y'all don't do this well. Because we're looking for that kind of feedback. But like with the whatever. Oh, and like, yeah, pick one of those churches and then ask. And I'm not sure, but it's probably going to be three different reasons or four different reasons. I can't remember how many churches you went to, but I, like Eric said, I think part of it will probably be COVID related. Like
COVID off the table, because I think, you know, that did some damage, but in essence, it wasn't the beginnings of, you know, addressing, you know, a bigger problem in the church. I mean, that problem has been there for a while. Like Eric said, the decline of Christianity and people being Christians or calling themselves Christians has been going on for a while. So yeah, that can add to that. But it kind of, you know, it's interesting. And this kind of gets into a lot of church, you know, kind of higher level, you know, position, you know, how pastors are and what they're calling to. It's not putting my head around like, okay, let's run this as a business, because, you know, a lot of people get turned off by that approach. And I'm not saying that every church should be doing, you know, a business model, but in essence, what you find 9 times out of 10, that those are, that are successful in today, looking at, you know, my barometer right now is like what I see today, what I use for, you know, information gathering, research, learning, talking, engaging with people both that are a part of that church or in or outside of that church and have some perspective or opinion on it. I feel like sometimes, you know, how when you grew up, when you were a kid and you were like, hey, I want to mimic somebody because you see something that like they were really cool at, or they, you know, they were the cool kid and you tried to mimic, you know, being the cool kid. I find like, and I was mentioning this earlier, is that churches, that the ones I'm going to either are trying to swing into that model or in the middle of the swing of that model. And they're seeing like, I mean, it's not wrong. And it's not like, you know, it's something that I would say, you know, is going to be a fad. I mean, it could be, I don't know, but that when you enter the door, it's about the experience and how, you know, whether or not like the certain music or style or whatever used to be the big thing. Now that's just like, it's got to have it. And it's got to, you know, the worship leader's got to have like long hair, and, you know, the youth pastor has to be hip and young.
And I just cut my hair. So I'll be fired soon. Now. Sure. Yeah. What was I thinking?
Well, if you've got any gray in your hair, forget it. You got to dye it now. And
there's a shift in that too. People aren't looking for the lights and glamour anymore.
I don't think so, dude. I think that they are, they may not be looking for it, but in essence, that's what the church is serving right now. That's
well, like all churches.
Oh yeah. A lot of them are.
So I'm going to say something. I think there is always going to be a pursuit, find the stuff that works and try and duplicate it and see if it works for the group you're trying to draw.
Agreed.
Right. I think that's human nature, is to try, because honestly, there is nothing new under the sun, and we are only so creative, and we try to do the best we can with what we got, but we also run out of ideas. And so if somebody has an idea that's working, I'm interested in hearing about it and maybe trying it if I think it might fit for the group that I'm drawing, right? I think that doesn't ever change. I think you're right. Worship is table stakes, right? I think that there's unless you are really ecclesiastical, having some contemporary style worship is a pretty important thing for a lot of people because they don't have that same draw. Most people do not have the same draw to like pipe organ worship, like just that traditional hymnal kind of style. They just don't. Now, you know, there are people that are very like that. You know, I was actually just talking to somebody who said that he loved going to the Anglican church and he is like 20. Like, because he's been in a vineyard his entire life and he can't do his internship this year or this semester because of the way his course load's broken up. And so they encouraged him to go and just check out different churches in Chicago while he's there. And so he went to an Anglican church. He's like, you know, I've checked out like probably a half dozen churches now and I like the Anglican church the most. And it's pretty, you know, it's pretty traditional. It's got like, you know, sit, stand, kneel. Like they're reading stuff out of the book. They're following the program. He's like, and it's different than anything I've ever done, but I kind of like it. Like, and there are some people that are completely drawn to that. Right. But I mean, it's really interesting.
Like some like burnt toast.
Let me ask you guys this. Maybe you can kind of in a quick summary, 90 seconds or less, summarize what your Sunday morning kind of looks like. All three of you.
Go ahead.
At the same time, ready, go.
Oh, not all.
Well, I like to do this. What my Sunday morning looks like?
First, we break out the snakes, and then, sorry.
I get up, and I'm like, right. I have 45 minutes to get ready for church.
Yeah, so summarize what your Sunday morning kind of looks like, just from your perspective.
Church-wise?
Yeah. No, what does the Sunday morning service look like for you?
It's,
you know what top rope we're talking about, right?
Yeah, I think so. Hi, my name's Adam. for myself, it's our worship service is about 45 minutes long with about 30 minute message. If you wanted to like quickly summarize that,
well, you have
what kind of worship are you doing?
So, what kind of work? You know, like, do you do a communion? Do you, you know, do or you're not?
Do
like,
communion.
Just give me like exactly like you're doing a Mike Ditka, you know, play by play of a Sunday morning service.
It's very
Mike
it's
Ditka. Very, when's the last time you watched a football game?
Exactly right. Sorry, I can't tell you who I linked to that before without Google.
It's contemporary worship,
which means.
All the major worship places out there. We're not talking pipe organ and kazoo. We're talking guitar, drums, singer, backup singer, lead guitarist, backup rhythm guitar, piano player, keyboard.
Yep.
And it's mostly all contemporary latest songs that are out there and some old hymnals mixed in and
And so you just worship the whole entire day?
I already stated it was like 45 minutes of worship, and then there, depending on, there's usually a message, and or depending on what goes on in the service. So,
do you guys ever veer like does it, you know, no announcement section, none of that stuff?
Yeah, most of that's announced in the beginning,
before worship.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you guys just have a, you know, time of prayer at the end, or no, or you just kind of close things out?
No, it's always a ministry time. Or if God moves during the service, then sometimes there's not a message, and we go right into ministry. So,
okay.
So, but we're now in they're expanding, and we're now in we had to divide into two services, a 9 and a 11, because. We ran out of room.
Nice. So.
It's a good problem to have.
It's a good problem to have.
So because of what?
People.
like
people coming into the church, animals. Like, why would we? That's a silly question. Well, we're just because people are afraid of each other. We want to space things apart.
There are too many. There are too many badgers in the first service. So they had to.
Are you filling only half the rows on Sunday morning because people sleep in?
The church was filling to capacity. We were overflowing into the hallways.
Okay.
All right. That's awesome.
So
that's what I was asking.
So they're in the process of a build out where the auditorium will hold about 450. So
Your church is very secretive. Give me the details. Secretive? Yeah, I was like, go ahead and ask the details. And
I've been talking.
Pulling them out of you. All right.
Wow.
Eric and Paul, please some better commentary.
Your church has this can it hold 450 people?
No. Not yet.
Okay, so what?
Oh, you have 40 people coming. Building out their services.
No, there's more than
the new sanctuary will hold.
The sanctuary going forward will hold.
Your seats aren't big enough for the larger.
That's awesome. We go back to one service.
I mean, you know, we're not. You know, it's not all about the numbers, but it is cool when that happens. Like.
Not all of the numbers.
I was going to say that because we don't have that kind of numbers. Like,
Eric's numbers. Yeah, our church many people have died or not died in terms of age in his church.
Mm. Our church is very outward facing, so we do a lot in the community for the homeless, for
you all look out the window during the whole service.
No, that's terrible. You're terrible.
Wow.
It's like, please come in.
Okay, Paul, you're next. You're next. So, all right, go ahead. Give me your more than 90 seconds of, like, you know, one-liners.
All right. Well, I'm looking at Planning Center Online, which shout out to them. They're awesome. We plan all our services through them. So I'll tell you that I worked with Katie, our pastor, to so we could, like, revamp our service and what it was, because we wanted it to be a little bit more a little less, like, you know, showy, us doing things, and more like the people actually doing some stuff too. So, like, we have some prayer time. So we start off with I'll start off with a psalm reading at the beginning, and then we'll do a song, and then we'd have the host spot come up, and the host will host the day, and they so we have two announcements parts.
Just two?
The first,
only two.
Just only two. Well, two points of announcements throughout the service. So the first one is really for external people, like not like brand new people, because the idea being new people come to church on time. People that have been going to the church for a while do not. So if we tell you the announcements at the top of the day, they're not going to hear them. They're going to say, gee, what about this thing? But it's also cool because it allows us to really lean into that announcement time and be like, welcome. You know, this is what we're going to do today. Like, we're so glad you made it.
So saying basically, Adam, we couldn't attend the early service because he doesn't listen to announcements.
Who we are, and then we do like a meet and greet. We'll do like an icebreaker question of the day, and then after that, it's the main worship set. We'll do three songs, and then after that, there's a confession and a communion liturgy that we do, where we do a confession where people for Lent, we're doing kind of a call and response thing, which is pretty cool, and then for communion, we'll do people come up and get communion, like we have the little juice and cracker packages. And then we'll do a prayer liturgy thing where, like, Katie will lead everybody in prayer. Like, she'll open in prayer, and then people can pray out loud. And we'll do like one round of let's pray for people that you know, and then let's pray for the sort of like global in the world kind of things. And then after that, we'll do announcements, which is the like internal things, like this is going on in the church this week, et cetera, et cetera. And then that person that's reading the announcements will also read the scripture for the day, because we their teaching at Harbor is it's not really thematic. It's more like out of, you know, what do they call that, expository or whatever, where it's like the actual, like, you know, it'll be out of some kind of, it's out of the Bible. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not just a theme, right? I don't know. I don't,
whatever.
I'm a volunteer.
We use the Bible.
I'm a volunteer. I don't have to know any of this stuff. I didn't go to seminary. All right. And then Katie will do her sermon. And then there's a song after that. Like, there's usually a little reflection time and then a song, which is usually like the most, like when I'm planning the day, that's the most important song of the day. Cause I want to like make sure that, you know, people, you know, can reflect with the right song. And then after that, it's the benediction and then that's it. So the service is probably about a little over an hour. We shoot for like an hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes tops. So if it goes any longer than that, we're going long. So
okay,
that's a service at us. What about you, Eric?
So my service starts with probably 30 to 35 minutes of worship, followed by announcements, and then we launch into the sermon for the day. That sermon is typically expository, so usually we're working through a book of the Bible or something like that and going through that. And then when we get to the end of that, sometimes these orders get swapped, but typically we'll do communion along with a closing set of worship. And then we'll spend some time listening to hear what God's saying and share what we hear God saying to the group. Our service is usually somewhere in the hour and 20 to hour and 40. The worship is a small band, a couple guitarists, some type of bassist, a drummer, and a couple of vocalists. Few vocalists.
Okay.
And it's contemporary worship, you know, and it's everything from stuff that I grew up with as a child, like some that we play some songs that are like worship songs from the 70s, but we also play very current stuff. You know, I mean, at one point, I think he even played Anchor by Skillet as a worship song as part of our set. So, nice. It just depends.
That's still old, but anyway, but
it's not that old. That's like 4 or 5 years old.
Okay. All right. So
maybe I'm wrong.
I thought it was holding. Okay. Interesting. The reason why I asked you guys this is because I wanted to kind of see, like, Paul's church kind of follows the fit and finish format that I've seen so far in the two or three churches that I've attended so far. And so, you know, the varying order is a little different depending on kind of what, but that's like kind of the format that, you know, you see. And then again, that tends to be just the general church format that I'm seeing constantly, you know, in the visits I have. And at the same time, in the churches that I've been a part of for, you know, eons, that's kind of been the format. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's a little bit more worship because you're being led by the Spirit or, you know, more prayer time, that type of stuff, you know, will vary that format a bit, but interesting because.
So tell us about the three churches you went to. Maybe if you could tell us the denomination.
Yeah,
like, tell us the name. Like,
looking at non-denominational, okay. You know, Calvary Vineyard like, but not Vineyard specific, okay. Because there's only really two Vineyard churches in the entire state of New Hampshire.
That's not true.
Where's the third one? Where's the other two? Way Lake up north, region though.
And Wolfboro. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not traveling 2 hours to church. Sorry, I'm not doing just, the same thing again.
You, therefore.
Even.
Okay, let me build my framework here. Within
the Eric's frozen. Oh, there he is. Thanks. Welcome back, Eric.
So
I could hear you guys the whole time. Yeah, I mean, so there aren't many Vineyard churches in New Hampshire. And there's two in southern New Hampshire. So, right. And there used to be one in Keene. There used to be one out of the Seacoast.
Yeah, both of those are gone.
Whatever.
Okay.
Oh, God, so, they just morphed into
something. To answer Paul's question, of the three, they've been either Calvary specific or they've been non-denominational in some form or fashion. Now, you know, whether that's part of the, what is that church organization of New England or something like that, the non-denominational, there's a larger church. It used to be Vineyard, Manchester Vineyard used to be part of it before they were Vineyard, Adam. Do you remember what they were called? They were part of that church association of something.
They were the Bridge.
Yeah, but they were Bridge underneath the larger non-denominational. There was a church organization that was for, you know, independent churches that were part of, you know, that wanted to be part of, you know, a church, you know, organization, but wasn't, you know, like the Vineyard per se, like you had to follow a, you know, very strict, you know, kind of structure. Eric would probably know it if he digs a little deeper. And so most of those kind of fell into those three categories, you know, those two categories, we'll say. So my experience so far, you know, they were typical Sunday morning, you know, 10 o'clock. So like dead smack in the middle, most of them followed exactly the format that Paul talked about in his church. Now, again, you know, the only difference to some of those is that because I'm more closer to, you know, churches within, you know, a good half an hour to, we'll say, 45 minutes away max for me in my home, I'm meeting more people that I, you know, obviously run into my church circles. So, yeah, you're going to meet those same people that were either in other churches that you were part of and came to this one, or they, you know, they're a relative of somebody else's and they just happen to be, this is their home church, but, you know, they, you know, their family members from another church. So it's that, you know, people kind of thing. And that's kind of what I wanted, because it's easier per se to have that connection when walking in. But at the same time, you know, it offers a level of comfort, you know, because you can kind of like, you have a, you know, you're a boat on the ocean when you go into a lot of these churches. And so whether you get hit up by, we'll call the media team or the message or the marketing team at the very beginning, the greeters, we'll call them, you know, we all talked about that when we were, you know, when in church plants and how you greet your greeters and how you, you know, you deal with, you know, trying to, you know, break the ice and work towards, you know, getting people to feel comfortable. And, you know, I've had varying degrees of that. You know, some of them have just been like, you could literally walk, you know, it's like Moses parting the waters. You can literally walk through the, you know, the greeting team and none of them will say anything except hello to you and then look the other way while they're saying hello. And they'll do the same thing on the way out. And not that that's a bad thing. It's just funny to see, because when you're on that outside of things and you, you know, you're just,
yeah,
you know, that, yeah, it's a different experience. And so, you know, you're not in the thick of it. And so you guys are always in the thick of it on a Sunday morning. So whether you're doing your volunteer duties or you're engaging with the people that you know in the church, you know, you have an established foundation in that environment. So you, it's easier for you to be able to just launch off and do the things you need to do, because you can always return back home to, you know, those people that are, you already have good relationship connections. So that, back to my point about having relationship.
Yeah.
So the formats, yeah, I mean, again, the only thing with the formats for me is like I'm seeing the same format over and over again in every church. Mm. And
you should check out the Anglican church.
Well, so bright, but that's not what, in essence, I'm not looking for something new and fresh. I'm just looking for something that more feels more like that they own it. You know what I mean by that? Like, it's not like they're just trying to follow a model of another bigger, larger church in the area that's being successful, because they own it and they adopted it and they, you know, they hang on to it to dear life and they're going to, you know, continue to further it along, versus like those that want to be the wannabes. You know, it's like the cover bands that want to be like the Aerosmiths and the, you know, those types of, you know, groups, you know, yeah. It's sort of like that sense. And so, not that to diminish, I don't want to diminish any of that, because that's not what my intention is, but it's just my impression and what I see. And so I see most of that out of the two churches that I've been to. The third one was a satellite church of a church from way back when, you know, we were going to in Chelmsford. The satellite pastor to this church in Manchester, it's a satellite church. So it's the typical, just a bunch of people meeting in a location and they televise the Sunday morning service of that pastor in Chelmsford. And you know who I'm talking about, Eric.
I do.
So, and that was interesting to see, because that's a connection I have, because you know, we go back way back when, and I have a relationship with him, and I have to go down to, you know, that location to meet him and say hello and, you know, reintroduce. But, you know, they're people, you know, he's under that leadership. And so where it doesn't, I hate to say falls apart for me, but it's not falling apart. It's just that it feels like I can see the hole in the armor, or the hole in the wall a little bit, or the crack in the wall, is the churches that have interim pastors. Now, they, and we already established this, and I don't want to be offensive and I don't want to, you know, offend anybody, but interim pastors are just exactly that. They're trying to hold things together while the church is doing that exhaustive research for that, you know, person that they can bring in to lead the church. Now, Some of them may be super passionate. Some of them may be young. And the ones that I've seen learn from pastors that I've got to meet initially in, you know, kind of quick introductions, they're young, but they also try to be young and hip. And that kind of turns me off very fast. Like, you know, they're the guys that want to have the hair down to the shoulders. And I'm like, guys, you know, come on, you're same age as me. You're literally, you know, 42. You've always said you're 42. You know, come on, let's try to be a, you know, whatever it is, it's a hang up for me. I'll put that out front. It's just a hang up. I can't stand it because it's like they're trying to be hip and they're trying to reach, you know, that's okay. I mean, you can try to do that, but that goes back to my point of like, okay, what are you doing as a church to make it you and establish you as a community and you uniquely as a church and versus just being like the other 7 million cookie cutter churches that are all trying to do the same thing, you know, and that approach. And that brings that, all that being said, brings me back to that whole point of like, you know, what is the church as a whole in a bigger sense? Like why do we keep trying to adopt strategies that the world does instead of just be, you know, what we're supposed to be and be happy with what we are? Like, I mean, it drives me bonkers. And again, I'll have to admit firsthand, if I go back and look at all the stuff that we did as young church, we did all that. And if I look back at it now on my older self, I say, dude, you're being dumb because in essence, you're just trying to, you know, do something or be something that may or may not be what God's trying to call you to. And stop just chasing something or chasing after something that may not be, you know, successful for you. You might get a little success from it, you know? And so that's why, I mean, I rag on Eric and his older church, but in essence, that's their niche. They follow that well. They attract that type of generation. They may not grow to the size of Adam's church, or they may not grow to something bigger, but in essence, as long as they know that and they can embrace that and they are conveying that message, that's a message that I'll sign up for and I'll be a part of.
Well, and every church has their niche and their approach, right? Like,
yes,
I would argue that our focus is not on glitz, glamour, polish necessarily, but depth. Like, that's always been our focus. Like,
did you say depth?
Depth.
Oh, depth. Okay. Let's say depth. Depth is not a thing you want to sign off for.
Yes, we all want them to die here.
It's okay. It's a fucking garage. That's all it really is. We're just hanging out here until we all die. That's a good mission statement. I don't know how you'd form that.
But don't misunderstand me. Like,
oh, I did.
Just because our niche has been retired people, right? There is a heart there for young families. You know, like we understand that there's a need for that for a lot of reasons, right? Like, there is something about the wisdom of the elders being united with the energy of the youth. There's a power in that. And like right now we have a lot of wisdom.
I'd agree with that as long as the elders are willing to spread that wisdom. That's the big catch.
Yeah, and I'll tell you when we have a few more younger people, but I think we have that. Like, I feel like they pour into my kids and my family a lot. That, you know, and some of that may be because we've been there forever, but some of it isn't that. Some of it is that they have gone out of their ways to do that. You know, so, but I think that there is, you know, you talk about niche, like when I look at niche, like we are very much about depth. Like we're not about how you look. We're about how you are, if that makes sense. Like,
agreed.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, I will tell you that when people come to talk to me about like programs, I'm like, well, does it fit what we're already trying to do? How does it pair up? And I think this is the right way to do it, right? Like, just because something worked somewhere else, you have to look at it from an aspect of what does this do to bring more life, more God, more truth, more maturity to the people we already have?
Well,
and is it maintainable? Like, those are kind of,
I guess, ahead. The only caveat I would throw at that would be, is that message coming down from the top?
Yes.
Okay. So if that message is clear, and that's
times when I would argue, I think we should try a few more things, but sure, that is very much about like, does this fit who we are?
Okay. If that message comes down from the top, then that's perfectly fine from my standpoint, because then I, as an outsider, can make the better call to say, hey, is this where I should be called to be? Because if you're just trying to say, if your pastor's saying, hey, no, we do everything, you know, if you're interested in blah, 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 then that never helps. Because, or the reverse, like you have a whole bunch of leadership that's like, hey, we can do everything. Let's just try to adopt this. And the pastor's like, no, we've got the very, standard, that can definitely throw a wrench in the system too.
And I would argue that the bigger a church gets, the more they're able to do everything. Like with Adam's church, they can do a broad variety of things because they have a large number of people that are invested in it.
Our church is solely focused on Manchester. That's what our church is focused on.
And Adam said it well.
In on being a community, on we have so many programs that we do for the city of Manchester because that's the message of the church for the community that we serve.
Serving the community you are.
Yep.
Right. Back to your numbers game, Eric, it doesn't really matter like how big, like if I look at, the larger church in the area, and again, we're not naming names, is that larger church does it successfully because they very much do four things, I think off the top of my head. And they do those, like it comes down from the top, right. it trickles down and nobody veers off that strategy because that's how they are effective and that's how they reach who they are and that's how big they've gotten from it. But it's not a secret sauce. It's like, it's the thing that they know that they're supposed to do that the pastors led very full and through, even when COVID kicked in, they were already way ahead of the technology ladder in terms of adapting that stuff, but it didn't affect that process. Like they were able to shift. And that's kind of what I was getting at. It's like, yeah, they had the resources to shift, but their volunteers were still small. Like, I mean, they had small paid staff and their volunteers that were still helping with their online presence. They basically said, those that were here, that we aren't going to be doing Sunday morning services. We're not called to do it. So we're going to shift you, the person, to this technology, and you're going to reach and connect with those people, whoever you can and how you can, when you can, and stay connected. And so they were doing online Bible studies and they were doing things that they could still build that community and connectivity and still be able to feed people along the way, because that's really what COVID, from my experience, would have been, that there were people that were really good about just keep feeding and keep helping and just being a resource and being available. And, for those that might needed it, could use it. And those that didn't care or, were just disconnected from it, they were just disconnected from it. They could just join in from a passive perspective. But that's, all that was being said was like, okay, so what happened with the smaller churches? Like, why did they try to, like, did they just, like, did the technology just totally, become so, like, huge and hard for them to be able to pivot on it, that they just, they were trying to say, hey, we have to keep doing both? Or they didn't say, let's take all our resources and move them here? Like, I don't know, maybe, like, that's what I'm seeing. And I could be wrong, Paul. I mean, you expanded it firsthand. So, I mean, what was that kind of process for you? I mean, you get it from the top saying we're going to shift and pivot, or was it like, are you going to try to do this both? Or,
a lot of it was, for the first Sunday, it was what's possible. What do we get? What's the plan? And so hey, Zoom seems like we could do it. Let's go, try Zoom. So like somebody signed up for Zoom and we sent the link out and we're like, well, what should it look like? Should we do teaching? Should we do recorded music? Should we just play something? For a while it was live stuff. We eventually ended up recording things sometimes and showing that. But again, I think there's some assumptions there that you're making about what, if somebody breaks into my house, I'm going to go for my gun and I'm going to, but then when it actually happens, I think that people cower under their bed because all of a sudden they're like, it's like, I'm in the moment and I can't necessarily with a clear head go, oh yeah, I'm going to do this. Right. It's like and so that's where we were. So it was again, a learning experience. As we went through it, I think that Harbor, our church is still around for various reasons. The volunteers, we have a really strong base that have been around for a while that didn't leave, that immediately came back and was like, how can I help? We have a really strong women's ministry which has been amazing to see. But I'll tell you, the other thing was our interim pastor was like really helped us navigate and make the decisions. And the, one of the things he taught me was this whole idea of you can be simple and you can do it as something excellent. And it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be like perfect. He's like, let's talk about how, like, what's the other one was like the minimum viable product. Like, what do we want to accomplish on a Sunday morning on Zoom? Like, what's our goal? You know, what do we want to do? Music, you know, sermon, like how long should it be? You know, we talked about all that stuff and he really helped us navigate that. I definitely think we're better off for it. So I don't know. Like, I don't know how other churches, you know, that like a bigger church like would have had to handle it or whatever. You now go ahead, Adam. What are you gonna say?
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. Well, so the church that I came from was still meeting on Sundays, and they broadcasted the service. And the church that I'm in now still met on Sundays and broadcasted the service for people who didn't want to go or didn't feel comfortable going. So
yeah, cool.
The two organizations I came from just continued going, having Sunday services. So, like they had the online presence already established, but yeah, they had a physical on-site operation at that time. So
it's interesting. So let me kind of give you a little parallel. So I've got, like, you know, in ham radio, the big thing with the ham radio and amateur radio is all about preparedness, like being ready for the end times or when we have a disaster, and, you know, practicing what you need to do for radio.
So it's just like going to church.
Well, exactly. So this is my parallel I'm trying to get. So I practice. No, but dude, you laugh like so. But like,
no, I mean, I get what you're saying. It's an interesting parallel. I wouldn't have even thought of that, but I completely get what you're saying.
In the attempt to practice, you know, to be effective in the times when they do come, I felt that the church kind of fell back on their heels a little bit, because in essence, they were already doing it. Like, in essence, they were doing home groups and they were doing things that were built around that stuff. Yes, those were physical. We were intentionally being in a location, you know, but in essence, you guys, like, the church was already like, hey, really all I would have thought it would have been is like, okay, well, yeah, great. Now we can't meet because our government says that this is the way it has to be. And, you know, for the health of all of our parishioners, this is the best way to do it initially. That really all you're doing is, like Paul said, you're just taking a piece of technology and saying, okay, well, let's try to, you know, well, let's work this problem out until we get it to run smoothly, or, you know, to develop itself. And maybe it might develop into something. I think what ended up really happening was the church, like, holy crap, we got to get on this online presence. And they just were like, we've got to establish all these things. And, you know, may not been happening in this group, in this environment. But I feel like looking at my examples of churches and that, and I hate to use the term half-assed it, but they've developed their online presence, and their online presence looks like it was just kind of sort of put together volunteers, and those volunteers got burned out and left. And so now they have like this, you know, half-baked solution in place that's still on their website that's showing, you know, something that could have, you know, that was solving a problem and that was helping, you know, continue to establish the community and keep the church alive and those that, you know, who are, you know, actively engaged in it doing stuff. That, you know, I take some of that stuff and then I go in and I look at the churches that it is. I'm like, okay, well, how do I see the connections of people, and how do I see, you know, what they're doing? Do I see like this, you know, do I see a cohesiveness between the worship teams and the leadership teams and the, you know, the greeters and all of those things that, you know, were stuff they were already doing before COVID, that, you know, when you got back into the normal swing of things, yeah, there might be less people there to do that. But in essence, you know, you just pare down that stuff to the point where it was, you know, capable for those volunteers that you had left to be able to help in the process. I mean, Eric, obviously, I mean, your church kind of fared the weather pretty well. I mean, you obviously lost a few, but in essence, would you say
that? Yeah, we didn't. Anybody we lost, it wasn't because of COVID. It was because we had a few people move away. We had some other stuff go on, but like, we didn't lose anybody due to a lack of investment or a lack of personal presence. And I will also tell you that the second they lifted
You stopped doing what you were
the hamper in place. No, we kept broadcasting for years. Like I don't think we broadcast now, but we broadcasted for almost 3 years. Like,
right.
You know, but the second they would let us meet in person, we met in person. Mm-hmm. Like it like that week we were actually in person.
And so just not to go into elaborate detail, but why did you stop broadcasting? Just the volunteer who was doing
it. Honestly, I'm not even sure. Our pastor just stopped broadcasting.
Okay.
He stopped recording. And I'm sure he made some sort of executive decision. I'd be willing to bet it had something to do with getting people to come back to church, like come back to the space. Mm-hmm. There is a value to being face to face. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be able to offer that more convenient thing, but I really do feel like there is no replacement for being in community, and it's hard to be in community if you're not seeing each other.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
It's not impossible, and I think the digital generation has shown that you can do it. I just feel like it's not easy.
Yeah, there's definitely stuff that you miss. I mean, we still have people, joining the Zoom quite a few more than I would have thought at this point, to be honest. But there was some kind of point where we were kind of having some conversations about what our future online presence would look like, and somebody sent along an interesting article about. It's either in the New York Times or somewhere that said that churches should stop with streaming their services online. And, you know, we continue to do so. However, I thought it was a really interesting point to say, because I think that it is, in some respects, it could be seen as a crutch and being like, I can just do church from here. And that's exactly what I don't want it to be. Of course we know it because we all missed something during COVID. Like,
right.
You can't say, hey, online church is fine, and then in the same breath say, well, gee, I missed seeing people in face-to-face in COVID. Like,
let me throw this out to you, and maybe this might change that viewpoint. That article I don't agree with, but I don't agree with how churches are just using video to broadcast what they're already doing inside the building. Like, in essence, you're creating a portal and a recording of what you're doing very effectively in your congregation on a Sunday morning. Awesome. And that works. But I think if you're going to use it as a way to be a net to catch things, it has to be something different. It has to be.
I feel like you look at churches and you go, man, and you just assume that they have all this money and all these volunteers and they can just do whatever. Because, like,
well, I think we're also
sometimes all they can do is what they're doing.
Back to my point is, like, so that article, I do agree. Like, that article, if their churches are just you're broadcasting what you're doing on a Sunday morning because you're focusing solely on what your Sunday morning purpose is, then video streaming that, there's no benefit to it. Except
there absolutely is benefit. There's absolutely benefit. There's people that come to Harbor that are sick, that they don't want to come in. They're still afraid about coming in. There's people that were watching their elderly parents that they didn't want to come in. They wanted to be there. So there's absolutely, like, each community serves it. Each church serves community.
Sure.
And so I think to be outside of it and go, well, they're doing it for the wrong reasons. Like, you have no idea why they're doing that.
I wouldn't say they're doing it for the wrong
reasons. Yeah, and there's other aspects too about that where you can have messages that you can re-look at later on down the line or revisit later at a different time. But the other aspect is like I understand the whole technology conversation, but the focus of finding a church is finding a community that you can fit in, that has a message that is biblical, that they are reaching the community, they are reaching people, they are welcoming, they want to build relationship.
But do you see that in video? You don't see that.
Well, what does it really matter, though? Like, honestly, yeah, no. You're searching for a church. I don't care if it's on video. I don't care if you've got the loudest screen. If you're going into a community.
No, you can't get – it's really hard to get that with video. Absolutely. Like, I would hope that they would – join a like what we call them journey groups or a life group or a Bible study, and then hey, if all they can do is like zoom in from somewhere during the week, then great, like that's what they can do. But like
it's bigger, there's a bigger thing to it than just whether or not you have access to the resources there.
Well,
right.
And let me say something else, because I do want to I there is something I think video is helpful. I think it's a tool. I don't think it's a replacement.
I'm not saying it ever was.
Right. I think there are some things you can do with that tool to fill in gaps. And I think what one of the things Paul said that I really like is, yeah, like we can use this as a tool. It's not a bad tool, but it's not a replacement for being face to face. And
but it's also not a tool to communicate how your congregation is and how your body is and how the relationships are. It's not, you will never be able to convey that clearly. In essence, so considering from the viewpoint of where I'm coming from, visitor, your message being displayed on a screen to me only gives me a couple of key things to get an idea of what one, how your message is, how your structure is, how long your service roughly falls. And it just gives me all external touch points to decide very quickly if I, you know, if I'm just doing a peruse or a drive by, you know, whether or not I want to put my butt in the seat on a Sunday morning. Now,
but that's different to everybody. Like that's you. No, for me, it'd be a different, like, I don't care. I don't care if you're there with a tambourine and someone's with a guitar. Like
I do care. Tambourines.
How about an accordion?
Triangle guy. I've got one of those in my house. Thank you so much.
So Fife, did you go in person to all those churches, or did you watch them online? So, you did. But I mean, so I feel like what you're saying is, if they can't do it perfectly, they shouldn't do it at all.
No. Nothing like that at all.
So
I'm saying,
if they can't, what's the online?
I'm saying the online, what are you saying around that? If the online presence is a half-baked solution, meaning not like it's perfect and it has every polish and every transition well.
They're churches, man. Like they're all going to be, unless I'm North Point or a huge church, it's going to be half-baked. Like it's not going to be.
When I mean half-baked, I'm not saying half-baked in the sense that the what you're putting for spit and polish on that video stream. I'm talking about like you started strong and now you're way past COVID and you're back to where Eric's format, where everybody's in person. And there's a, you know, every once in a while, maybe a podcast or every once in a while, another video here and there. So like they're only doing half. Like, so instead they're just like, it's like someone who wants to start a YouTube channel and they start out really strong and they're producing 15 videos and then they stop like 4 weeks later and you get one video and the last video.
Well, then great. Find the church and fill that need.
Everybody's not in person though. Like certainly in our church, like we actually have those conversations because one of the things that came up, which I think that maybe you're maybe kind of alluding to is like one of the things we've said is I don't want to compete with the large churches. Like I don't want to have to feel like I have to, as a 60 person church in Chelmsford, compete with a huge church in Atlanta or San Francisco or wherever from an online perspective. Like if they're looking at my church going, I'm going to go to this church or this church. And if they pick the one with the larger, the better video, like so be it. But we talked about whether, you know, what our online presence and the why. And I think that a church just has to have a good reason of why they're doing the online. Like if they're doing it just to do it, to your point, if they're doing it just to do it, which is the same of any program, if they're doing it just to do it, then it's not the right reason. But if they're doing it, like it's filling some kind of need for their community, then it makes sense.
That's a lot. So I'm trying to unpack it here.
I am going to say we've been talking for a long time. And I don't know that there's an answer here. Like, I feel like this is one of those conversations that's like a land war in Asia. We could spend the rest of our lives having this conversation because there isn't really a right answer, right? There's a right answer for the circumstances. And And I will tell you, Eric, you're looking for different things in your church, and that's not a bad thing, than I look for in a church that I'm looking for. Not all different, not everything different, not prioritized different, but
you three definitely come, like, so it's me on the outside looking in. And so you guys have established yourselves in your churches. And so you've been in the trenches for a while and you've been in that process. So it's harder to see a fresher view from the outside when you're in the midst of it all the time, even though you could talk about it and get input and feedback.
I get it. I think you're just harping in on specifics where in reality, the truth of the church is to find a community that you can plug into, be a part of, grow spiritually, and grow with others.
Right. So back to my point around that is that if your established church,
that's the baseline. Like, but the media, the other stuff is outside fluff. Like, I get it. It connects with people, and then great. If you find that point, then there's a need that's missing, and you're be able to fit in. Then great, God's moving you into that place to be able to fulfill that need and help and support. But ultimately, it's about being spiritually fed, growing with others, building relationship, and being part of a community. That's it. That's what a church is for. Like, let's get to soup to nuts. Like, we can talk about the video, the lighting, the camera needs, how many people it touches, how many videos it touches, how many people see the video throughout the week, how many badgers
are in this service.
It doesn't matter.
You
it
guys
really
are all
doesn't matter. Badgers.
You guys are missing what I'm getting.
All about community.
My original point and my whole process down this whole road we've kind of gone down was that I want churches to be effective. I want churches to be, you know, able to do what they're called to
awesome.
Be.
Awesome. Great.
Right. But
then
they're
find
not
a community that. And do that.
So find a church and plug in and be and help them be more effective.
Yeah.
I agree with that, but I can't right now because I'm still trying to find a place to plug in. Because right now my church is
maybe you just consult for all these churches with all your great ideas.
Don't
misunderstand what I'm saying, Eric. I think you have great ideas and I think your perspective is good.
I don't want another job.
Well, then quit your current job.
No.
Let the monthly recurring revenue keep making you money.
Okay. So what you tell
okay,
me. All I'm getting at, my whole point in this whole process down the path, and I'm going to summarize this very quickly, is that my viewpoint that I've seen and my analysis I've done of churches in the New England area, in the Southern New England area, what is portrayed and what they try to put forward does not always equate to what they are on a Sunday morning. And so all I'm trying to get at is that if you want to attract the right people, start attracting that based off of the platforms you're already on. Don't reinvent them. Don't create them to be the bigger churches or follow somebody else. Stick to who you are and shape it to a place that when I, as a visitor who have no idea who you are outside of Adam, I can clearly understand you very quickly, so I'm not.
It always comes back to being Adam. What's up with that?
Well, you know, Adam. I can't say Eve because you know there'd be a whole different problem there. That's all I'm getting at. So I totally understand where Paul's coming from, and you know, not trying to go beyond what you can handle and what you can do based off your volunteers and the resources and the people you have. I perfectly subscribe to that. I've been through church plants with you guys directly where I've been burned out and I've been like at the end of my rope because I'm tired of like, you know, always trying to be the one to do something or not do something or just ramming my head against the wall over and over again, you know? So all that was to said that, you know, me being on the outside, seeing this, the one thing I constantly see is that churches just aren't being who they're supposed to be or what God's called them to do. Mm. Again, this is on my side of the fence. It might be
from your view, right? I get it.
Not from where you guys are, because you guys are inside. You guys have the relationships established. You have the connections with the people, the pastors, the leadership, all of that stuff. You've been through thick and thin, and you know, you cried on each other's shoulders. You've laughed on, you know, in circles. You know people on a very detailed level. So someone who's not on that side of the fence doesn't have any reference or frame of reference from that perspective. So when I come in, if I see a church trying to be like another church that I know is down the street that has thousands of people in their congregation, I can almost see like them trying to follow a model. I get like, dude, you know, be you. Don't be anybody else. That's what's going to attract the people. And that's where I get frustrated because it's like I'm now getting into my fourth or fifth church. And, you know, I'm not going to be, you know, eventually it's become a trade-off thing. And I don't want it to be a trade-off thing because I want to be in a place that, you know, one, God's telling me I need to be there. Two, you know, it's a natural fit. Like it just slides in. Like, I mean, we've all been in churches. I mean, we weren't in a church that we didn't like to be in and be a part of because the relationship was very genuine. We knew, you know, the biblical understanding, all of those components that make, you know, why we stayed there, you know, important. And, you know, it's a back to Adam's point about, you know, following their mission, following their process, you know, not trying to do something that they're not called to do. But that's what I'm just seeing. And so that's all I'm trying to, you know, address is that I just don't want, you know, that to continue on. That trend sucks because it's just like everyone's just trying to be like somebody bigger because they're trying to attract more bodies because they, you know, they're at that point, like, you know, where we get back to the interim pastor and they're trying to, you know, use their resources effectively. And so, you know, just cut it back. Don't try to be like the, you know, the next biggest guy or, you know, the next hottest thing on the, you know, the whatever.
Yeah. I think that's deep insight. And I think that's, man, you should be planting a church.
No.
No. But we'll leave it with that. So thanks. Hopefully.
Like my wife doesn't listen.
Our conversation tonight was interesting to you. You know, we try to bring good conversations every time. We talk about a lot of different things. Apparently, this is one of those items that we're pretty passionate about. And hopefully you enjoyed this conversation with us. And if you did, please subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any of these conversations. Also, feel free to send us an email at feedback@forefatherspodcast.com or follow up with us on our Discord chat, which we try to get on regularly and have a conversation. Again, thank you. Have a great night. I hope this was a good conversation for you as well as what was for us. Please feel free to provide any feedback. Thanks a lot. Have a great night.
Oh, and thanks for listening to the Forefathers Podcast, where we talk about faith, fatherhood, and other F words. If you want to learn more, head over to our website at the4fatherspodcast.com. If you'd like to help our show, make sure you give us a review on iTunes or in the podcast app of your choice. Those reviews help others find our show. And if you have any other questions or comments, you can send those to feedback@forefatherspodcast.com.